You are listening to the Myth TV Cast.
I'm Pat Davila. This is
I'm Dan Fry. How you doing?
We do the Myth TV Cast. We're Myth users for a long time. I am. I did my first Myth install on like an 800 megahertz box running Fedora 1, I think, using an old PVR 350 card. And I enjoyed a lot. You know, I've had some of the commercial DVRs like cable boxes and whatnot, and I find them all lacking. You know, the Dish Network and whatever.
Cable company.
All the cable company DVRs are all very basic. They're basically just digital VCRs. And the Myth stuff is just so full-featured. There's a big community around it. I mean, you could do the basic recording stuff, but you could do all the things too. You know, the audio and the weather, all the different plugins available for it. It's really great. Just say, hey, show of hands, who's running Myth? Are you guys all running Myth?
I have run not Myth.
Uh-huh.
I'm not running it right now.
Okay. What are you doing? Standard F you doing or?
I did have Hydeck going for a while. I got a new computer and had trouble getting it installed. So.
Okay. What kind of capture device were you using?
Pardon?
What kind of capture device were you using? Is it a cam card, digital?
Yeah, I don't remember which one right now. It's been a couple of years since.
Okay.
But I did have Hydeck running over the air and it worked fine.
Yeah, it's real nice. With the digital transition, basically they've killed the analog feeds. The cable companies are all in the process of eliminating analog feeds. So unless you have like a cable box, if you have cable, and you do your recordings from, you know, one of the video outs of the cable box, you won't be able to do it like over the air, you know, analog or you know, direct out of the coax cable. You're going to need a tuner.
I did get some of the cable, the local stations to work with Hydeck, but like I said, that was a couple of years ago. I haven't been able to get it to run with my new computer. So.
Yeah, we just found out that in our area, October 8th, that's the cutoff date. We now have to switch to something else. We can no longer get that analog feed.
Yeah, so it was the cable company.
The cable company.
Yeah, the U.S. is all over the air is all digital now. There might be a few areas where you might have some analog feeds still lingering around.
Translators and low power.
Right. Yeah, so that's on its way out. You know, it's only a matter of time until that stuff is all phased out completely. So if you have, like, you know, most people for, like, analog capture, they do one of the Hotbox PVR, like, 150, 250, 350 cards. They'll still work, but you're going to need a box to do that, either a converter box, digital converter box, or cable box, or satellite box. So you're gonna need that, some kind of a setup with a blaster to do the channel changing.
I'm basically at the point where I'm so upset with Time Warner because they're cutting out PBS stations out of there.
I think the mandate is for the cable companies is that if for open channels, what they do is they do cams, what the format is, and they have to keep the over-the-air stations unencrypted. Okay, so you should be able to get CBS, NBC.
Fox,
PBS, right, CW. You should get those. So that's the situation for us.
Yeah.
We can only get those six stations unencrypted. Okay, so if you have a cam device, that's what you can pull down. Over the air, like you were saying, it's very good. It's phenomenal. Okay, you just need a decent antenna and doing the capture that way. The quality is very high. Some people say that the quality is better than cable or the satellite.
It's not
really nice.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. It's not compressed at all.
So now with the digital transition too, it's gonna limit you. You have to be in a closer proximity to these broadcast towers. So you've lost a lot of. They've really reduced their signal down quite a bit.
Yeah. So for cam devices, what you could use is there's a bunch of them on the market. One really good device that a lot of people have is the HD Home Run, which is a dual tuner cam device and has a network connection. So you plug that into your switch, you run your coax from whatever, either you're doing the digital cable or your antenna line down to the two connections. And what it'll do is when you go into Myth, you'll see the setup. You're able to select HD Home Run. Over the network, it'll detect it. You'll put the device name in there. It's like a unique identifier. And then you should be able to start scanning and getting your cam frequency set up.
You can get a digital feed from there? There's no analog conversion?
No, that's purely digital. It's pure digital. Yes. Yes, you can mix your inputs. You can have a cable feed on one and an antenna on the other. It shouldn't make a difference. The only what it is when you do this Myth setup, I just got one like this past week. And what it is there's two tuners that have been identified. You're going to have to do the scans individually on one. So if you do an over-the-air one, you say, I'm going to do an over-the-air scan, you do the scans, you'll get your frequencies. You do your cable one, you'll do the scans, so you have two unique tuners on the box. There's also PCI cards. There's the HDTV one. That's the.
Yep, I actually run the PC HDTV 5500 card in
right.
my setup, and it works really, really nice with the OpenCam channels. The channel changing, like you said, it's like that. It's really fast. Everything that has come through there has just been, you know, crystal clear. You know, I've had no issues with the high def quality, you know, coming out of there. It's been great. And yeah. I haven't had issues. We talked to some guys in the lug at one point. They said that every now and then the frequencies change on them. I have not had an issue with that since I've been running that particular card in the box.
Right, right. That's the thing. If they do like a reorganization on your cable system, you're going to have to go out and rescan your cam. Mm-hmm. For us, what they're doing is, one of the things they're saying they're doing is, they're going to kill the analog feed, and that's going to open up bandwidth so that they can offer more high-def channels. So we're going to go from like 30 high def to like 100
yeah.
overnight.
Cincinnati Time Warner's history is to get rid of stuff you want and put on shopping.
Yeah, on the free channels. So they're only obligated to do the over-the-air channels. So that's the deal with the cable companies, okay? With satellite companies, okay, everything is encrypted. So that means that for every TV you have, you're going to need a box to decrypt it, okay? So the only advantage that the cable companies are offering right now, that the trend they're going is the 6 over-the-air channels, you'll be able to get them over cam, which is still kind of good. You know, for shows like, you know, the network shows that I might want to record, my HD Home Run works well, or one of those other cam capture devices work well with it. The cam capture devices are nice because you can do either the cable or you can do the over-the-air. And you can switch back and forth and mix, which is nice. Okay, going forward with like satellite and cable, the device that you're going to want to get with the Myth 22 release, which is coming out supposedly very, very soon, like this week or 2 weeks, okay, is the PVR 1212, which is a hot pod device. Okay, it's a breakout box. Okay,
USB
device. What it is it's going to do the capture via your component out cables on either your cable box or your satellite box. And there's a separate connection for the audio. You can either do like a standard audio cable, or you can do a 5.1 digital audio connection. And it'll record and do the capture in 5.1. So this is going to be in the 22 release. Mythbuntu is going to have the new release, and the 9.10 release is going to have Myth 22 in it. Okay, so as of 9.10, you will be able to plug in that the PVR 1212 box, set it up like you would set up any other device. It'll work out of the box.
And that's running now. You can download Mythbuntu Alpha 6 for Karmic, and it has all of that in there right now. Still working on some stability.
Right now, it's listed for about $175. You'll see coupon codes popping up every once in a while for about $150. So on the Linux Link Tech Show forum, we have like an entry for our show. Whenever I see any coupons popping up in there, I'll go into our bulletin board and I'll post the coupon. So if you see a coupon code for like $150, usually lately they've been from Dell. So for $150, if you see it for that, buy it. That's the box to get. This box does the encoding on the fly in H.264 high def. It also can handle standard def too. They're all H.264, so you can either do 480. Okay, for standard F. You can do 720p for the lower high def setting, and also 1080i is the max setting. There's also variable bit rates in there. I think the default setting out of the box is like the middle bit rate, which is very good quality. Now, the thing about H.264 recordings is it's much more intensive on the CPU to playback than MPEG-2, which has been the standard for a long time. Okay, I have my main box is an AMD 64 2 GHz dual core. Okay, for the recordings that are coming over the HD Home Run, the cam stuff, which is an MPEG 2 already, I can play back those high-def recordings, 1080i, with my 2 GHz AMD 64 box. No problems. Okay, with the H.264 stuff that's captured with the PVR 1212, it can only handle the lowest bitrate settings, 720p. Okay, but wait, I'm getting there. If you have an NVIDIA graphics card, okay, they have what's called VDPAU. It's this library that does the decoding and offloads the playback of the videos to the graphics card. Okay, so what this means is you'll have VDPAU set up, which is going to be part of Myth22 by default. Okay, if you have an NVIDIA graphics card, you know, when you do install whatever distro you're going to use, you're going to install the NVIDIA graphics driver. Okay, and you're going to set up a playback profile using VDPAU. Okay, so what happens is once it plays back, the playback gets offloaded to the graphics card. You're going to see CPU utilizations between 2 and 5% of high-def video.
And those are cheap cards.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You can find one.
$50, a really good card.
Even less. I mean, I found it.
8,400.
Yeah, 8,400 on Newegg for like $34.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They're very cheap.
Yeah.
Totally worth it. Totally worth it.
No, you don't want to. I mean, it's overkill.
It's a super old computer. Mm-hmm. As long as it'll take the video card, whether it's PCI Express, hopefully they'll make a PCI one, and hey, you get a PCI video card for $30 and use an old machine, watch an H.264 on that thing.
Yeah, and the highest setting, 1080i with the highest bitrate.
Right. And the card doesn't even care, that card could probably do 100 feeds.
Right. I recommend going to the MythTV wiki, you'll see a listing of the NVIDIA cards that are supported with VDPAU. Okay, I think it's from like the 7800 series forward. So if you're in like the 8000 range, 9000 range, you're fine. You'll be able to do this. It'll offload the graphics playback and everything. Going forward, as far as like the video connections, a lot of the older graphics cards had S-Video out or Composite out. The newer cards have either HDMI out or the digital connection out or VGA out. You probably want to go with HDMI. All the new high-def TVs, they're all HDMI. HDMI is fairly well supported now in Linux. I just built one of these little NVIDIA Ion boxes, okay, from Zotac, okay, which is a motherboard. Little box, about this big, little motherboard. It's got the processor on it. It's got a dual-core Intel Atom processor, okay, and it's got an NVIDIA 9400 mobile chipset for the graphics. Okay, little box. I got the little case about this big. For about $300, I built one. There are some companies that offer pre-built ones. I know System76 has one for about $350. Okay, but you can do it cheaper. So this is a front end that I built, and I've got the VDPAU enabled, and it works great going through a high def TV. The recordings.
So do you have a separate front end machine?
I have my main box, which is a combined. When you start out with Myth, you're going to get probably a combined front end back end system. Okay, the backend system is where the capture cards are located, okay, and that's where the database sits. The database has the information about the programming information. The guide information gets loaded in there, so whenever you set up a recording, it'll associate that guide information with that recording. Okay, so it sits on MySQL database on the main machine. You can have that as your main viewing system, so the first time you do a build, I recommend doing a combined back and front end system. So any of the Myth specific distros, you know, Mythbuntu, Linhess, not Myth, or Mythdora, that's probably the base setup you're going to do, combined front end back end. Again, you're going to have a graphics card, you're going to have your outputs going to whatever TV you have set up. Okay, once you have this base system, you know, what you can do is what a lot of people do is they build front ends. Okay, I built that little Zotac box for a front end, and that does HD. So I have my main box doing my recordings. I have three tuners I'm going to have. I'm going to have an HD home run capture device doing the cam stuff for like the network stuff. And then I'm going to have my PVR 1212 as like my main capture device connected to my cable box, my high-def cable box. Okay, and that's where I'm going to be able to do all the encrypted channels out through the component out connection on the cable box. I'll be able to get any channel that I'm able to access. Now, as far as controlling the cable box, most high-def cable boxes, you can do control the channel selection via FireWire cable, okay, or you can use a blaster. The blaster is usually like a little dongle that's connected to it with a little infrared sensor on the end of it. You need to set up a script to do the channel changing depending upon what kind of box you have. You know, if you look around, you Google whatever model box it is, MythTV, you'll probably find the blaster, you know, and with the codes associated with that you'll need for your blaster script.
If you use the FireWire, is it finally easy, or at least easier?
Well, talk to him. Right. I haven't done it yet.
I use the FireWire. However, I only get those six unencrypted channels.
That's but you're doing recording.
The recording.
You're talking. I think he's talking about the channel changing.
Right. Channel changing.
Control of the box.
Yeah. In the myth wiki out there, there is a script out there for channel changing specifically over FireWire. Okay. And the whole stack has been rewritten as of like two releases or so. At least I know in Mythbuntu, the FireWire stack was rewritten. This was in the main Ubuntu distribution. I believe they've done quite a bit of work for this upcoming release as well on the FireWire stack.
Yeah, it's been rewritten.
Are there other commands such as power on? Possibly,
I haven't looked into it yet. Okay. That's some of the stuff that I have in my list of research.
Because I found that some cable boxes or some cable companies will turn the box off.
Yeah, I've been running into that lately.
I think it's specific to your company.
Yeah, factor goes down. To
yeah.
What you're going to need to do is set up an IR blaster. Okay, some of the really common IR blasters, a lot of people were using these old Microsoft blasters. I have this old Microsoft blaster that I got on eBay for about $20. Okay, you plug it into your USB, it's got a little connection for the little IR sensor, you run that little sensor to the front of the cable box. But the cable box or the satellite box, you have to find the sweet spot. It's very specific, you know, for the receiver. Basically what it's doing is it's mimicking what your cable or your satellite box is doing when you're changing the channels. It's sending out the IR codes for that particular box. I've done it with this Motorola DTC-700, which is like a standard F box, but it should work the same with any cable box or satellite box. You just have to find the particular codes. So normally when you do the myth setup and you set up your capture devices, there's a little line in there where it says change channel script. That's where you're going to have your change channel script. Now, the script that I use, it's Python-based, so it's got a little PY extension on it. A lot of them are Perl-based, okay? I've seen some Perl and some Bash ones, too, I've seen. If you look at the forums, you know, do a little research, you can look in the MythWiki for a particular model, you'll get the codes and whatnot, so for the change channel script. A lot of the Myths distros, they handle the remotes now way better than they used to back in the old days. Okay, that Microsoft USB IR blaster that I have, I plug it in. You know, I've done installs with Linhas and also Mythbuntu. They were recognized out of the box. So I didn't have to do anything. As soon as the system came up and it was up and running, I can get the remote. That portion works. I'm able to, you know, do my remote for, you know, going through the menus and whatnot. So the only extra manual piece I had to do is in the mid setup, I had to say, this is going to be my channel changing script. Okay, now the channel changing script has specific instructions, you know, for your cable box. There's a whole bunch of codes, like a bunch of hexadecimal values and whatnot. So if it's a common box, okay, a lot of the cable companies and satellite boxes, they're the same boxes, so someone has to have it. It's very rare that you're going to run into a box that's not supported. Okay, if it's not supported, someone will get it and they'll set it up pretty quickly. Some of the really good places to look at resources: the Myth users mailing list. Okay, the Myth TV wiki is a good place. Any of the forums and the bulletin boards for Mythbuntu, for Linhas Not Myth, and also Mythdora. All very good. Any of those three, you'll be in pretty good shape. Usually.
And usually these distributions have a nice little, you know, GUI interface that allows you to select the brand that you're using, so the type of remote control that you have. If it happens to have a blaster built into it as well, you can then also select that. I know in Mythbuntu, when you select the remote control that you're gonna use, it has two little boxes. You can either enable it or disable the IR piece of it as well.
Yeah, as far as hardware, you know, most stuff will work, like motherboards and whatnot. I tend to stick with NVIDIA graphics cards. They're closed drivers. Some people have problems with that. But honestly, if you're going to be wanting to do HD playback, especially with H.264 stuff, you're going to want the NVIDIA stuff. Right now, that is the way to go. Okay. I know some people have had success with ATI for high def. Okay, but the problem with that is all your playback is going to be on your CPU load on your machine. So you get into that area where how much CPU do I throw at it to handle the playback, especially if the high def stuff.
If you're watching something that's flash and high def, is that still offloaded?
No. Right now, VDPAU supports MPEG-1, MPEG-2, H.264, VCU-1, which is a popular codec that they use on high-def DVDs, okay, and also I think Windows Media videos also. So those will get offloaded. Honestly, it's really up to Adobe whether or not they want to help implement that.
We ran a movie from Amazon and streamed it through the flash. And I don't have a high-def TV right now.
Right.
I was just wondering if that's... You know,
it's not going to offload.
It's all behind the CPU if I do that.
Yep, exactly. I mean, you can have Myth, okay, and on the Myth box, fire up a web browser and point to that, and you'll be able to watch it. I've done that with Hulu. Now, Hulu is a whole other bag of beans, okay? People have tried to develop third-party plugins for the different software. You know, a lot of people use XBMC, which is like a front-end media center, very popular. Originally started on Xbox, but it's now been ported out to regular x86 stuff. Also, Boxy is another popular one that a lot of people use. The difference between Boxy, XBMC, front-end media stuff, it doesn't actually do any recording. Okay, but some people, that's all they want. Okay, so if you want to just like watch like online, you know, media, you got a nice collection of media stuff, videos and audio and whatnot. You don't want to do any TV recording? Great option to use. They have builds that run on Linux, and they're pretty good. I think Boxy only does 32-bit. Yeah, there isn't a 64-bit.
64-bit support for Boxy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's relatively new. XBMC is a little older. I think Boxy is a fork and heavily modified version of XBMC.
Now, 22-bit, is there something, is there new functionality to support Hulu?
No, not built in. Not built in.
Not yet.
It keeps being broken. What it is the whole Hulu stuff, okay, Hulu, they were allowing third-party people to develop third-party apps to use Hulu without going through the Hulu site. Okay, but they started breaking it, and it became a cat-and-mouse game a lot of times. So what I do when I do Hulu, I just fire up a browser, and I just watch it through the browser. Okay, whether or not that's going to change, that's up to Hulu. Okay, now someone wrote a plugin called Mythvodka that supported Hulu, and it also supported... What's that? BBC stuff, too, I think it supported. And I think that's broken, too. It keeps cat-and-mouse game. Yeah, it's unfortunate. Now, the thing with the Myth 22 browser, it's going to have Flash support in there now. So previously what we would have to do was, I had a little hack in there when I was doing Linhas, where you were able to put a menu entry, you'd click on the menu entry, and it would open up a browser to the Hulu site. Okay. So with Myth 22, you won't have to do that. The internal Myth browser will have Flash support in there. You'll be able to open up the internal browser and set up your sites that you want to go to, without having to open up an external, like Firefox or whatever.
Is that something that you can turn off with configuration, or would you have to recompile the whole thing?
No, it's going to be in there by default. So the Myth 22, besides, you know, what we've discussed already with VDPAU and the PRVR 1212, all the GUIs and stuff are going to be based upon Qt 4. Awesome. Qt 4 is phenomenal. It's less resource intensive. It's really nice effects. It's going to kick up the graphical interface a lot.
The transparency is there, overlays. You know,
it's going to be beautiful.
Menus now, you know, come in and retract appropriately, and they're not as, you know, DOS-y looking. I want to say like DOS.
It looks like TiVo. Yeah. You know, like how TiVo looks, that same kind of thing. Also, Sage TV is another commercial DVR software that's available on different platforms. It's, if you look at Sage TV, it kind of looks like some of the default Myth settings. You know, it's very, you know, you got your menus, you go in, you dig in so many layers. It, you know, very simple, straight. It's great. You know, I don't have a problem with it. Some people, they want the bling. Like, I know Boxy is making a big thing of making a nice presentation, also Xbox MC. You know, they're pushing in that direction. So with 22, with Qt 4, they're kind of going along on that path. You know, nice, pretty stuff. Theming engines. They're going to have like a modular design for the theming and everything, so it's going to be easier to do different themes. They already have a set of default themes in there.
Yeah, so it's Terra, I believe, is called.
It looks nice. It really looks nice.
That's in there. Kind of puts everything in more of a horizontal setup, so you can kind of just scroll back and forth between everything. You jump into a menu and you still follow that same flow. It's really nice.
So what's the captioning support for closed captioning?
If it's in the feed, the actual stream coming in, I believe there are a couple different ways to display the captioning in there, and you have some options, say always display it, or, you know, I think you can even right from the menu turn it on from the
there's... So if it comes in on the, whether it's a digital signal or analog, it's captured, and I believe
I haven't had any issues. I've seen it, you know, periodically. I look through the menus and hit it, and it pops up, you know, and it displays.
So what I really like to do is like capture some of that if it's like a public affairs program or some political guys speaking. I'd like to save that
onto
a file and be able to search it.
Read it later. Right. Now, if you've never done a Myth build, your programming guide information for North America, there's a service called Schedules Direct. Okay. Before there was Schedules Direct, there was this service called Zap2It. Zap2, it goes out and aggregates all information on all these TV programs, okay, for all the different cable and satellite and local areas, okay? And it used to be free, okay? For years, it was free. You would go to the Zap2 site before you did your Myth setup. You get an ID and a password, okay? And you would say, okay, I want cable for, you know, suburban New Jersey. This is my cable setup, and it'll have like a channel lineup. Okay, when you do the MIT setup, you would go in and you would plug in your login information for Zap2it, and it would go down and start populating your database so that you have your scheduling for at least 2 weeks worth of programming information. What happened was, the story that I heard was that there were these guys building commercial MIT boxes. Okay, Zap2it kind of like didn't bother because the community applications like MIT and a few other ones, you know, some Windows ones and some Apple ones. They looked the other way. They didn't care because it's relatively small communities in the thousands. They really didn't care about it. But once they caught wind of these commercial guys doing these boxes and using their service in a commercial product, they got pissed. So they basically said, okay, we're cutting you off in like 2 months. So a lot of the guys, mostly from the Myth community, but some of the other projects too, they got this nonprofit established called Schedule to Direct, and they made a deal with Zap2it. And for $20 a year, you have a year subscription, you'll get your guide information, okay? This is still a lot cheaper than, say, TiVo. I think TiVo's like 12 or 13 a month.
Yes.
Do the math, okay? So it's relatively still low cost.
Okay. People bitch about the 20.
What's that?
People bitch about the 20 bucks.
Yeah, people were bitching about 20 bucks.
Is it still based on the Tribune company?
Yes, it's all the same information.
So it's the same crappy data that they're...
You won't notice any difference.
Okay.
Okay. It works well, you know.
That's what I saw.
They did some improvements, actually, with it. Like, things, you know, are compressed a little better. They download a lot quicker. They process faster once it's done. Before Schedule Direct came about, my setup used to take, I don't know, it would run for 5-10 minutes, maybe 20 minutes, and if that actually got in between like a recording taking place, I actually would notice, like, you know, the processor would jump up, artifacting would occur inside of some of the streams. I pretty much said, okay, I don't like that anymore, put this so that it does it at like 2 o'clock in the morning when I'm not watching it. And now, I mean, if you go in back and look through the logs, it like downloads and updates everything, you know, like that. I mean, after, you know, 30 seconds, you know, I mean, it goes very, very fast.
Yeah, it's pretty quick. A lot of the Myth distros, they'll have all that stuff set up so that it'll automatically do the database updates nightly, or if you leave the box on and off. A lot of the hardware supports turning on and turning off. So there's some additional setup that you have to do that, so that if you know, you have a recording at 3 o'clock in the morning, you want to do the machines off, it'll power on, it'll cycle up, it'll do your recording, and then you'll have like a shut-off script, say, you know, half an hour, 20 minutes later, whatever you set it at, it'll shut down again. Some people leave their boxes on all night. You know, that's your choice what you want to do. Check the list to see if there's specific motherboards and how the support is for the wake and shut-off scripts. It varies. I have like an old Asus board that I've used for like 4 or 5 years now, and it's like, it works. Very little fiddling. But do a little research. Again, you know, do research, just check some of the mail, and we'll see what stuff, hardware people are using, what components. The Lin has Forum, not Myth. They have a whole thing dedicated to stuff. They'll have like a 3-tier setup of like hardware recommendations. Tier 1, works out of the box, minimal, great. Tier 2, a little bit of fussing, but it works for the most part. Tier 3, stay away. Just check that stuff and you'll be golden. You know, if you're going to do VDPAU and you want to do the high def, I recommend staying with the NVIDIA cards that can do VDPAU. Relatively expensive, $50, you know, range. You can go to Newegg and buy them. So some people have ATI and they've reported some success. They say it's getting better. But right now, Intel doesn't have it. ATI doesn't have any kind of implementation of offloading like the NVIDIA does. And that's right now. Might change in the future, and I hope they do. You know, I'd love to have an open Intel driver that'll be able to do that, or an open ATI driver that'll do that. If they do that, maybe I'll go buy an ATI card. But right now, I'm sticking with the NVIDIA.
About cabbage devices, I'd like to switch to an HD over the air, or high def over the air. What do you think, the home run?
Yeah, works great.
Is that the best way to go?
It's great for over the air. It's got a dual tuner setup over the air. You can record two different shows at the same time. Just get a splitter. Works great. It also works with digital cable to open.
Are the files going to be much bigger? How does the file size compare between that and the 1212 that's recording in?
High def files, they vary between 4 to 8 gig an hour. dependent upon what quality settings. Now, with over-the-air and cam, that stuff is MPEG-2, and it's already encoded. So those cam over-the-air cards don't do any encoding whatsoever. It's just strictly capture. Okay, the PVR-1212, which is going to go to H.264, has a built-in encoder. So it does the encoding on the fly, similar to what the PVR-150 series cards did to MPEG-2 and standard def. Instead, it's going to be high-def H.264. So with those card cards with encoders, the CPU load is minimal. Okay, digital over-the-air and digital cable, again, minimal, because it's already encoded into the file already. Okay, the old original raw capture cards, there would be a raw file, and you would have to set up a script to encode to whatever format after the fact. Okay, and then the PVR 150, 250, 350 cards did MPEG-2 on the fly. That was a big boon. You can get a low-powered system to do the encoding on the fly. Great. I did it on an 800 megahertz system. Worked great. Hop-Hog is very popular. You know, they did the standard F-Box capture devices for a long time, and now they got the PVR-1212. In my opinion, the PVR-1212 is going to be the default capture device going forward in HD. If you're fortunate enough to get open channels on your cable system, or you're going to do over-the-air, HD Home Run, another great device. Or, like Dan said, the HD TV 5500, it's a good card.
And Hotbox does have some newer cards out now that you get one stub on the back that can actually read two signals off the line.
Off the one connection.
It's not fully supported yet under MIT.
2250, the Hotbox 2250 card.
Yeah, there's a 1850 and a 2250. Yeah. Two different cards that I believe are doing that. And you can go out, find drivers. The guy has been slowly getting them ready to go, but they're not.
Not in the kernel yet.
In the main, yeah.
So you're going to have to compile the driver yourself as of right now. Probably in the next release of 23. By then, the driver will probably be in the kernel, and it'll just be another recognized device that you can do capturing with.
Right.
I think what we have now,
some of the Pinnacle devices work great. You know, you got to just research a little. You know. That's great. That's a cheap card, $30. The HD Home Run goes for about $150. It's about the going rate. But you're getting two capture devices. And I think the 2250, I think, is about $100.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, the PVR-1212 is lists for $175, but you'll see coupons for like $150. See, for $150, get it.
Even the HD Home Run, if there's one with the coupon code, I can't find it for
$125. That's a great device. I would get it for that price easily. So. Blasting is not too bad. I mean, you've got to do a little research to see what cable box or satellite box. You know, satellite companies tend to stay with the same ones, you know. They'll have like one or two different models and everything, you know. It's unfortunate that they're locking everything down, but it's just the way it is, you know. Some people have asked about the cable cards. You're not going to see them in Linux anytime. Never. Don't hope. It's not going to happen. The thing is, they don't want to implement the DRM on a Linux system. They don't want to go there. So it's not going to happen. So if you're adamant about using cable cards, go set up a Windows Media Edition.
Those work pretty nice.
Yeah, you know.
Well, it's like, so Time Warner, they took C-SPAN 2 off their basic tier. Like, I have Roadrunner, and then I have basically what they call Lifeline Cable, which is all broadcast affiliates.
That's more than what we got. We got six.
Well, I mean, I can use indoor rabbit ears and get everything except my WCPO.
That's not too bad.
So there's really no reason to have cable anymore.
Because recently the CPO was making a move off with already channel 10. Some of the people had problems receiving it.
Those talks are happening all over in Philadelphia. The one of the main news stations. Once they made that switch over from UHF to VHF, they did not have enough signal. They had to request special permission from the FCC to broadcast three times an hour because they could not reach anybody out in a very small radius outside of the city.
Because I'm 20 miles from Cincinnati for downtown, I get better reception in the state inside of Dayton, Springfield.
Yeah.
So I get 18 PBS affiliate channels.
Over the air, like the antennas, I think averaged what, like 30 mile range?
Yeah.
You can get boosters and more expensive antennas with signal boosters to go a little further, 50 miles if you're in like in a rural area, you know.
The problem I've got is one of the reasons I bought the place that I did is because it had nice mature trees. Doesn't work so well for antennas.
Now, as far as front ends, like I had a little box. It was called the Hop Hog Bait. It was called the Media MVP. Okay, this was a little tiny. It works great. What it is it's not officially Myth that you're running on it. What it is a separate project called MVPMC. And what these guys did is they rewrote the firmware and open firmware. Okay, the thing with this little box is it can only do standard def, MPEG 1 and 2. Okay, so it's kind of a dead device. It's been out a long time. Now, Hop Hog supposedly is doing a high-def version of this box. They're going to be coming out within the next year or two. That'll be something to keep an eye on. If you can get like a little tiny embedded box that can handle playback and stuff, awesome. Now, Popcorn Hour is a box that I had for a while. It's a little embedded box about yo big, and it can handle playback of all different devices. Now, that can handle your Myth recordings and any archived videos and whatnot. Okay, it has like the Sigma chip that does the playback, and it can handle all different formats and everything. Okay, but it's not going to integrate with Myth at all. Okay, now some people, if you go on the Popcorn Hour forums, they're talking about doing some web-based stuff, kind of tie it into Myth a little bit. But right now, it's not really integrated. The only thing you'll be able to do is point it to like a Samba or an NFS share where your recordings are, like a little renamed script, and you'll be able to watch your shows. You won't get any commercial skipping or anything like that. So it's kind of limited what you can do, but you can play back the files. The Atom stuff, awesome. I love this little box that I built, this little Atom box. Great. That's
people. Atom plus the NVIDIA.
Yeah.
So is it
they call it NVIDIA Ion platform is what the term they describe it. But it's basically, you know, an Atom processor, single dual core. The dual core ones are kind of the newer ones that people are going towards. Okay. And then you'll have the NVIDIA graphics card in the little box. Awesome. Love
low
it.
Low power, silent.
Yeah,
and
quiet.
Does great high def quality.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because it's got the NVIDIA card and it's doing the VDPU. And this is going over the network. Like
That's the other thing, too, is if you can get a wired network to these places where you're going to put these front ends, you definitely want to, because you're going to be pumping a lot of data going across the network.
Yeah.
If you can't get a wire out there, you definitely want to upgrade to a wireless end box.
Yeah.
So that you can get that throughput going through. You can set up the QoS on that to allow for that media playback to go over the network.
Yeah. You can do, if you do like 802.11b, you can do standard def wirelessly. But if you're going to do high def, you're going to upgrade to an end network, like you said.
I think it's something like 13 megabits per second of continuous stream you need to have, and yeah, you say you have a 56, you know, or what? I'm sorry, with a wireless G speed, you would think you'd have it, but it needs to be a continuous rate going through there, and you don't always get that, especially if you have other people jumping on the network too. If you have your family, you know, kids, wife, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, buffering. I assume in your front end box, maybe like this ion powered box, you can set to buffer a little more. Than that.
Yeah, you can bump that up a little bit. You know, if it is a little glitchy, I haven't experienced anything, and I didn't have to manually change any of my buffer settings or anything.
And you can also, I don't know how difficult it might be, but in your back end box, you can possibly convert the MPEG 2 to H.264. Or is that just way too
late? After the fact, after you make a recording.
The Scion box can decode H.264 on hardware, and the MPEG 4 stream, the H.264 stream, would then use less bandwidth.
You could.
Because the files are smaller, but it's still streaming in real time, or playing it in real time, minus the buffer, so then your bandwidth usage would...
You try that.
You can set up a script after a recording completes to
re-encode
that transcoding
it
down to an MPEG 4 file using H.264 codec.
If you could do wired connections, man, that's the way to go. Like, I finished my basement, I put gables on there with gigabit switches, man. Rock and roll.
One thing I also started doing was segmenting my network a little, too, to eliminate a lot of the broadcast traffic that occurs. So you can start routing that a little differently to eliminate a lot of that cross-talk that would occur with all the other devices that I have. I mean, I've got, like, I don't know, like 12 different devices of different natures all on the network at one time. You know, and they're all on, they're always on. I don't shut things off. You know.
Right, if you got a server running, you got a workstation running, you got your laptop, you got your main Mythbox, you got a front end. You know, I had to do that. I've been pushing, because I got a wire connection, I've been pushing the data across with the gigabit switches. I haven't had any problems. The high def stuff works great, no problems. Now, if you have a high def box, Okay, well, if you have a high def recordings and you're doing captures in high def, and you have your TV is a standard def, usually those NVIDIA cards will downscale to standard def. Okay, it'll handle it. Okay, that's what I have. My main myth box right now is hooked up to standard def TV. I have my recordings that are high def. I play them back. They work okay looking through the standard def. The video card will downscale it all right. As long as you have the proper, you know, the connections, the video connections, it'll do it.
Any experience with either using Apple TV or Mac?
Don't talk to me about Apple. I'm the wrong person to talk to.
Apple supposedly works out of the box. I don't know how many think it works.
Yeah, some people have made some of these minis as front ends. I think there is an Apple binary that they have. How well it works, I have no idea. Some people like them. I think they can handle the MPEG-2 stuff. I don't know if they can handle the H.264 stuff.
System 76 also has a similar form factor of a box that runs Ubuntu right out of the box, and you can easily add something like the Myth Ubuntu repository right into there and install it that way as a front end.
Yeah.
If you believe they have NVIDIA cards in there, you'd be able to take advantage of the...
Very, very similar to the box I built. It's got NVIDIA embedded.
It's not the Ion platform, though. They do have a similar Ion platform as well. Almost same form factor.
So would you say that was System 70?
System 76.
Yeah, very good stuff. Nice stuff they make. Old, very Linux, pro Linux company.
They contribute a lot back to the mainline.
Yeah. Yeah. Wii, people are using their Wiis in Myth. You can do it. Yeah, the remote.
Xbox.
The remote.
Yeah.
I use the Microsoft remote, and what I do is I have a Harmony Logitech 880, which is really nice. One of these fancy remotes that goes for like $150. You can get them a little cheaper, like $125 now. It's well supported. It has learning and has a whole bunch of these codes in there. With the Microsoft remote, I didn't have to do anything. I just used up the Harmony. It's got all the codes in there. Works great. So you can use that fancy remote. Just do a little research. Check into it. I have the 880, and it works great out of the box. He has a newer one that has some issues with it.
Well, that's because I think my kids have banged it around a little too much.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. I'm actually considering looking at something like a USB UART, you know, to put into the back of it to control all of my devices, and then I can get like a cheap, you know, remote control. If they go start banging it around, I don't care, but I'll still be able to have then MIT control all the same stuff, do all the same stuff that the Logitech Harmony is doing. Likewise, I mean, you can't program those, at least the model that I have, you cannot program them on Linux. I need to have some type of a Windows machine.
Oh yeah, at least on a virtual machine or something.
Yeah. It does not play nice.
That's unfortunate. Some of these
the one that you have.
Yeah.
You have the 880.
Somebody wrote a Linux client.
Yeah.
You can use the 880. Yeah. To do the settings and stuff through a browser, and then it'll write it to the remote.
Is that the one with the built-in LCD screen?
Yeah, the 880. 880 is really nice, and it's starting to come down a little bit now because the new ones are out. So that's a real nice one.
I used to sell them, actually, and I bought another one just used. And I stayed away from the LCD screens, the touch screens. I prefer battery life and, you know, ease of use and stuff.
Those little Microsoft remotes, little cheapy remotes, work great. You know, I got like 2-3 of them floating around. My 5-year-old, oh, not my 5-year-old, but my 2-year-old throws it against the wall. Big deal.
The remotes, some reason, they tend to outlast the devices they're controlling.
Yeah, but the remotes, again, it's like any other hardware. You look at the list that people have. There's a bunch of different remotes people are using.
Actually, I'll probably hang on to my TiVo remote and just use that until it dies. Cause if I could find out what you know, it has the thumbs up and thumbs down.
Right. All the remote stuff is done in LIRC. There's two files, LIRCDConf and LIRCRC, which is like in your local directory. The LIRCDConf file has the box definition, depending upon if you have a cable box, saddle box. You have to have your definitions for the cable box in there. Okay, and then what you have in your LIRCRC file in your local directory is the actual remote codes that you're mimicking. And in there, it's specific. It's broken down by apps within Myth. Like MPlayer, you'll see a bunch of settings. You'll see a grouping. VLC, if you use VLC for anything, you'll see a grouping in there. So those are the two main files where all the remote stuff is used in. It used to be really much more difficult to do the remote stuff. It's really gotten a lot easier. The mid-specific distros have really pushed in that area, and it's usability, and it's pretty good now.
Can you configure Lyft to accept more than one remote?
I think you can, yeah.
Yeah, because I have my regular remote, and then I also have a Nokia N800 that I can... It actually exposes a Telnet port on the back.
Android, too. I use the Android also.
Network, or if you want, you can put a Bluetooth...
An iPhone, too, I think some people have.
You could use a Wii controller with the accelerometer in there to move the yeah, it's pretty neat. It's pretty neat how it is. Go look at some of the videos for Linux MCE. They have a very similar setup with that, and they just walk around and they kind of move things, you know, twisting their wrist and moving it up and shaking their arm, and it changes the menus pretty nicely. All of that is available. There's even a Linux Journal article not too long ago that stepped through specifically what you needed to get the Wii set up with a Bluetooth dongle, because all they are is just Bluetooth. So.
Obviously, you'll need a Bluetooth setup on your main machine.
Right. And most dongles nowadays are supported.
Cheap.
The stack is on by default, you know.
I actually came with a bunch of questions.
Shoot.
All these power users or whatever, but I have been experimenting with MythTV ever since it first came out, and found it to be just about the most difficult endeavor that I'd ever experienced.
Initially, you're right.
Put it down, and... I tried over at a friend's place recently. I had Ubuntu installed disk, and I thought, well, there's Mythbuntu, and apparently you can just grab that repository. So rather than download another ISO and install Ubuntu, then I went and installed Myth, ran the setup. The setup worked wonderfully. It was beautiful, easy to do. And then when I went to run Myth, I got a black screen with the squigglies on it, and horrible, and pissed off, because that's always what I would get with Mythbuntu. I found, my brother had actually found that there's a bug in it that it relies on the EDID information from the display device.
I was about
and
to
will
get into that.
Only use that, whereas Linux MCE didn't have that problem.
Right.
And you know, I was so irritated. But even Linux MCE.
You're running into issues nowadays with EDID?
This was a month and a half ago, two months ago.
What kind of TV did you have hooked up?
And it was a computer monitor.
I see what monitors, LCDs, and also the
CRT.
Well, that's the thing. CRTs and standard def TVs, there's still manual tweaking that you might have to do for the graphics, the TV out. HDTVs and LCD monitors, it does a scan and it'll get back to values and automatically configure it. So, what kind of TV was it?
Pioneer Leafs CRT.
Yeah.
So
CRTs are a little iffy.
I think it's a little older, but it also transmits its EDID information.
Right.
But is it correct information? Because the EDID programming is really up to, did the guy just grab, you know, one that he worked on for a different model and just throw it in there, or did he actually update it and put it in correctly?
It is correct information.
Okay.
I'd say...
I've heard of people talking about that TV.
An old girlfriend, she bought an Apple laptop, and it's 5 or 6 years ago now, and I said, wow, you know, this is one of those laptops with DVI, and I immediately took it home, plugged it into the TV, bam, all the beautiful Apple glory right on that TV screen, flawless, zero overscan even. That was a huge problem I had with Linux, was the worst overscan ever.
Yeah, sometimes you have to tweak the overscan.
If Apple can do it, Linux can do it too. It's
sure.
not rocket science.
Sure.
It is a standard. It's freaking TV. So aside from that, my main question is, you know, you mentioned something like Linhas, whatever,
yes.
I don't know what you're talking about. What is the easiest, most trouble-free way to go from start to some kind of Myth setup on a system?
I don't think
Linhas, even Mythbuntu. I've done both of those. I've done Mythora also. It really is dependent on your hardware. And like I said, a lot of the newer LCD monitors and also the newer LCD TVs, high-def TVs, it's detected and it works flawlessly out of the box.
They play great. Def-
my high-def TV in my basement is a CRT. Okay, it's a Toshiba. It's Hachi. Right out of the box. Plug it in, you know, HDMI, boom, works. No problems.
I should have a second option. I mean, being standard, I should be able to go into Myth and say... output 720p always, or output 1080i always.
Yeah.
You're a computer.
Wait, you might have to do.
You have a couple things. You can get, like, is it an NVIDIA card that's inside of there? You can get look at the NVIDIA driver level and set up those scan modes and all
manually.
That stuff. That's a little bit more. You can also go into the myth setup area and change how your video plays as compared to your menuing display. So you can set up to show different modes for different types of resolutions that you haven't recorded. So if you're recording standard def, you can say, always show it to me in this resolution. If you're recording high,
you might have to do that.
You can record it in it. So every now and then you may have
more anyway, but
okay.
And see, that's the thing. I was even trying to keep it simple. Mm-hmm. I just wanted a front end to play back the media on my machine.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the like I said, the setup program worked. And I did find that the ATI and NVIDIA programs that would replace your usual, system display settings, they solved that problem.
Right.
Still a little overscan, but so usable that I didn't care. It was good enough.
Right.
And I was so happy for that. And I thought, okay, now my display is set up on the computer, right? And the TV's going to say, oh, his display is set up like this. I'm just going to work. No. I decided not to.
Yeah.
I get the exact same problem on my TV that I got on that computer monitor.
Right.
And that was not an Ubuntu setup. I take that back. It was the same thing. It was an Ubuntu setup, and then I installed Myth on top of that. So I hear Linux MCE is much easier. It really is much more.
Well, I don't know about that.
If you're talking maybe just the Myth aspect of it,
maybe
they might do a little bit better with that. But you are really dependent upon the hardware, even the type of motherboard that you're using, the model.
It's heavy duty. Linux MCE.
It's very dependent. It's usually two or so revisions behind Kubuntu is what the current is.
Okay.
So you're also limited by that respect, in that the kernel that it's using could potentially be a year or two old. So it's not going to have support for a lot of newer motherboards out there.
How do you spell this Linhas? What is this?
Linhes. Linhas. It's Linux Home Entertainment System. It's what Notmyth. It's the same Notmyth people. Okay. They've rebranded. It's called Linhas. And they're about to go final with the latest version.
It is out.
Today?
Yeah, I just talked to him.
Yeah, because I talked to you last night and you were talking about it. Cecil.
He's
exciting.
Yeah, he's released.
It's nice. I ran it. It's nice.
Was up there. Yeah.
That's what I was looking for.
Try it. Try Linhas out.
Plugged into my 53-inch TV
with
a 10-foot interface on it.
I know.
That is super easy to use. And I can get my internet or whatever.
That's tough because it's an older TV. With the older TVs, it's a little iffy. Like, I plugged in when I first did the initial install on the front end, the little Ion box. I used a 21-inch LCD, an Asus monitor. No problem. Bang, right out of the box. Now, when I tried it with a KVM switch going to a VGA connection, it would drop it down to the lowest. So it would be like 320 by whatever. As soon as I went through the HDMI directly, beautiful. High def, everything looked great.
The DVI did help a lot.
Yeah.
I originally had problems and was about to tear my hat out and I said, wait a second. I forget about the handshake. The, back the older hardware, things like that, the handshaking was sometimes a little iffy. You would actually have to turn on your source device, then turn on your TV, then power on and off your source device again. So they would all make sure to handshake and then...
What these things are doing is when they boot up, they do detections on the graphics, and depending upon what's hooked up, they'll auto-detect it and raise and lower the resolutions accordingly. So with the standard def TV, you might have to go in and force it to say all the time exists and manually configure your NVIDIA configuration file, the Xorg file. You might have to do that. It's getting better. It's gotten a lot better.
Especially with the new release, at least with Ubuntu, they have a new version of Xorg in there as well. They're going to have the latest running there. That there is a lot of stuff in for overscan. Mythbuntu specifically has a nice little tool that puts little arrows in the corner, and you can spread it out to specify what your resolution should be, and then it uses that then after the fact. So you don't have to actually go in, and the interface for this was always horrible because it was literally up on the keyboard or up on the remote control to move it up one at a time. You couldn't actually jump or type in the number that you wanted to. So you literally started at zero, had to go to 1920. You know what I mean? And just click the whole way up.
Yeah. We're gonna wrap it up. It's getting
Now you can fix that overscan in that way.
So we're on we do the MIT TV cast. We've done about 9 episodes. We do them like every couple weeks. If you go to Linux Link Tech Show, the TLSTS.org, you'll see the form entry, and you'll see the MIT TV cast in there. You can also shoot us emails, Pat and Dan at the MIT TV
MythTVcast.org.
We have a MythTVcast.com,
sorry.
Yeah, we have a MythTVcast website set up, MythTVcast.com. There is links to the forums. There are links to any of the videos that we produce with stuff. We've gone through some setups here and there with trying to do some in some virtual environments.
Great places to go. Great places to go. Again, MythTV users mailing list is a great resource. Also, the Lynn Hess Not Myth forums are very good. MythDora and the MythBuntu. They have a whole section for MythBuntu.
MythWiki as well.
Yeah, MythWiki is a great resource.
MythTV.org.
So, you know, you can always shoot us emails too if you want to talk or whatever. Okay? Thanks, guys. Well, they're fighting for air when it's already there. We stretch our necks to stand, but they're too quick to compare. Hold the body for ransom, 'cause the mind is a billionaire. Then drop into a hip hop. Around, you're already there. The next in line takes his own.